Cassette number 4, side 1, A Treatise on Cosmic Fire, continuing section 1, division E, Motion on the Physical and Astral Planes, on page 146. The first Logos embodies the will to live, and it was through his instrumentality that the Manasa Putras came into objective existence in relation to the human and Deva hierarchies. In this system, the blending of the divine ray of wisdom and the primordial ray of intelligent matter forms the great dual evolution. Back of both these cosmic entities stands another entity who is the embodiment of will and who is the utilizer of forms, though not the forms of any other than the greater building devas and the human hierarchies in time and space. He is the animating principle, the will to live aspect of the seven hierarchies. Nevertheless, these seven hierarchies are, as says HPB, the sevenfold ray of wisdom, the dragon in its seven forms. Footnote. Subha Rao says in 5 Years of Theosophy, page 102, as a general rule, whenever seven entities are mentioned in the ancient occult science of India in any connection whatsoever, you must suppose that those seven entities came into existence from three primary entities, and that these three entities again are evolved out of a single entity or monad. To take a familiar example, the seven colored rays in the solar ray are evolved out of the three primary colored rays, and the three primary colors coexist with the four secondary colors in the solar ray. Similarly, the three primary entities which brought man into existence coexist in him with the four secondary entities which arose from different combinations of the three primary entities. Return to text. This is a deep mystery, and only a clue to it all can be found at this time by man in the contemplation of his own nature in the three worlds of his manifestation. Page 147. Just as our Logos is seeking objectivity through his solar system in its threefold form, of which the present is the second, so man seeks objectivity through his three bodies, physical, astral, and mental. At this time, he is polarized in his astral body, or in his second aspect, in like manner as the undifferentiated Logos is polarized in his second aspect. In time and space, as we now conceive it, the sum total of jivas are governed by feeling, emotion, and desire, and not by the will. Yet, at the same time, the will aspect governs manifestation, for the ego, who is the source of personality, shows in manifestation the will to love. The difficulty lies in the inability of the finite mind to grasp the significance of this threefold manifestation. But by thoughtful brooding over the personality and its relation to the ego, who is the love aspect and who nevertheless in relation to manifestation in the three worlds is the will aspect likewise, will come some faint light upon the same problems raised to deity or expanded from microcosmic to macrocosmic spheres. The Mahadeva aspect, or the first Logos, who embodies cosmic will, is controlled by the law of synthesis, the cosmic law governing the tendency to unification. Only in this case it is not the unification of matter and spirit, but the unification of the seven into the three and into the one. These three figures primarily stand for spirit, for quality, for principle, and not so primarily for matter, although matter, being inspired by spirit, conforms. Page 148. The law of synthesis has a direct connection with one who is still higher than our Logos and is the law of control exercised by him upon the Logos of our system. This is a spiritual relationship that tends to abstraction or to that synthesis of the spiritual elements that will result in their conscious return, the whole point lying in that word conscious, to their cosmic point of synthesis or of unification with their source. Their source is the one about whom naught may be said, as we have earlier seen. Therefore, in connection with the first Logos, we can sum up as we did with the other Logoi. A. His goal is the synthesis of the spirits who are gaining consciousness through manifestation, and who, by means of experience in matter, are gaining in quality. B. His function is, by means of will, to hold them in manifestation for the desired period, and later to abstract them and blend them again with their spiritual source. Hence the necessity of remembering that fundamentally the first logos controls the cosmic entities or extra-systemic beings. The second logos controls the solar entities. The third logos controls the lunar entities and their correspondences elsewhere in the system. This rule must not be carried too far in detail as long as man's mind is of its present caliber. The mystery lies in the realization that all is carried on in a divine cooperation that has its base outside the system. Hence, too, the fact that the first logos is called the destroyer because he is abstraction if viewed from below upwards. His work is the synthesis of spirit with spirit, their eventual abstraction from matter and their unification with their cosmic source. Page 149. Hence also he is the one who brings about pralaya, or the disintegration of form, the form from which the spirit has been abstracted. If we carry the analogy down to the microcosm, a glimpse can be gained of the same idea, and hence ability to comprehend with greater facility. The ego, being to the man on the physical plane what the logos is to his system, is likewise the animating will, the destroyer of forms, the producer of pralaya, and the one who withdraws the inner spiritual man from out of his threefold body. He draws them to himself, the center of his little system. The ego is extra-cosmic as far as the human being on the physical plane is concerned, and in the realization of this fact may come elucidation of the true cosmic problem involving the logos and the spirits in prison, as the Christian puts it. See, his mode of action is a driving forward. The will that lies back of evolutionary development is his, and he it is who drives spirit onward through matter till it eventually emerges from matter, having achieved two things. First, added quality to quality, and therefore emerging, plus the gain faculty that experience has engendered. Second, increase the vibration of matter itself by means of its own energy, so that matter at the moment of pralaya and obscuration will have two main characteristics: activity, the result of the law of economy, and a dual magnetism, which will be the result of the law of attraction. All of these three concepts are governed by the law of synthesis, which is the law of a coherent will to be, persisting not only in time and space, but within a still vaster cycle. Page 150. These preliminary statements have been laid down in an endeavor to show the synthesis of the whole. In the use of words comes limitation and a clouding of the idea. Words literally veil or hide thoughts, detract from their clarity, and confuse them by expression. The work of the second and third logoi, being the production of the objectivity of the essential spirit, is more easy to grasp in broad outline than the more esoteric work of the first logos, which is that of the animating will. In terms of fire, another angle of expression may perhaps elucidate. The third logos is fire in matter. He burns by friction and gains speed and added vibration by the rotation of the spheres, their interplay, thus producing friction with each other. The second logos is solar fire. He is the fire of matter and the electric fire of spirit blended, producing in time and space that fire which we call solar. He is the quality of the flame or the essential flame produced by this merging. A correspondence to this may be seen in the radiatory fire of matter and in the emanation, for instance, from the central sun, from a planet, or from a human being, which latter emanation we call magnetism. A man's emanation or characteristic vibration is the result of the blending of spirit and matter and the relative adequacy of the matter or the form to the life within. The objective solar system, or the sun in manifestation, is the result of the blending of spirit, electric fire, with matter, fire by friction, and the emanations of the sun in time and space are dependent upon the adequacy of the matter and of the form to the life within. The first logos is electric fire, the fire of pure spirit. Yet in manifestation he is the sun, for by union with matter, the mother, the sun is produced by whom he is known. Page 151. I and my Father are one is the most occult statement in the Christian Bible, for it not only refers to the union of a man with his source, the monad, via the ego, but to the union of all life with its source, the will aspect, the first logos. We will now endeavor to confine ourselves strictly to the subject of fire in matter and its active effect upon the sheaths of which it is the animating factor and upon the centers which come primarily under its control. As we have been told, and as is generally recognized, the effect of heat in matter is to produce that activity which we call rotary, or the revolution of the spheres. Some of the ancient books, and among them a few that are not yet accessible in the Occident, have taught that the entire vault of heaven is a vast sphere, revolving slowly like a stupendous wheel, and carrying with it, in its revolution, the entire number of constellations and of universes contained within it. This is a statement unverifiable by the finite mind of man at his present stage and with his present scientific accessories, but, like all occult statements, it contains within it the seed of thought, the germ of truths, and the clue to the mystery of the universe. Suffice it here to say that the rotation of the spheres within the solar periphery is a recognized occult fact, and indications are available to prove that science itself likewise formulates the hypothesis that the solar ring pass not similarly rotates in its appointed place among the constellations. But at this juncture we will not deal with this angle of the subject, but will study the rotary action of the spheres of the system and of its content, all the lesser spheres of every degree, remembering ever to keep the distinction clearly in mind that we are dealing now simply with the inherent characteristic of matter itself, and not with matter in cooperation with its opposite, spirit, which cooperation brings about spiral cyclic movement. Page 152. Roman numeral 2. The effects of rotary motion. Every sphere in the body macrocosmic rotates. This rotation produces certain effects, which effects might be enumerated as follows. 1. Separation is produced by rotary movement. By means of this action, all the spheres became differentiated and form, as we know, the following atomic units. A. The solar system, recognized as a cosmic atom, all the so-called atoms within its periphery being regarded as molecular. B. The seven planes, regarded as seven vast spheres rotating latitudinally within the solar periphery. C. The seven rays, regarded as the seven veiling forms of the spirits, themselves spheroidal bands of color, rotating longitudinally and forming, in connection with the seven planes, a vast interlacing network. These two sets of spheres, planes and rays, form the totality of the solar system and produce its form spheroidal. Let us withdraw our thought at this juncture from the informing consciousnesses of these three types of spheres and concentrate our attention upon the realization that each plane is a vast sphere of matter, actuated by latent heat and progressing or rotating in one particular direction. Each ray of light, no matter of what color, is likewise a sphere of matter of the utmost tenuity, rotating in a direction opposite to that of the planes. These rays produce, by their mutual interaction, a radiatory effect upon each other. Thus, by the approximation of the latent heat in matter and the interplay of that heat upon other spheres, that totality is produced which we call fire by friction. Page 153. In connection with these two types of spheres, we might, by way of illustration and for the sake of clarity, say that A. The planes rotate from east to west. B. The rays rotate from north to south. Students should here bear carefully in mind that we are not referring here to points in space. We are simply making this distinction and employing words in order to make an abstruse idea more comprehensible. From the point of view of the totality of the rays and planes, there is no north, south, east, or west. But at this point comes a correspondence and a point of real interest, though also of complexity. By means of this very interaction, the work of the four Maharajas, or Lords of Karma, is made possible. The quaternary and all sum totals of four can be seen as one of the basic combinations of matter produced by the dual revolutions of planes and rays. The seven planes, likewise atoms, rotate on their own axis and conform to that which is required of all atomic lives. The seven spheres of any one plane, which we call subplanes, equally correspond to the system. Each has its seven revolving wheels or planes that rotate through their own innate ability due to latent heat, the heat of the matter of which they are formed. The spheres are atoms of any form whatsoever, from the form logoic, which we have somewhat dealt with, down to the ultimate physical atom and the molecular matter that goes to the construction of the physical body, show similar correspondences and analogies. All these spheres conform to certain rules, fulfill certain conditions, and are characterized by the same fundamental qualifications. Later we will consider these conditions, but must now continue with the effect of rotary action. Page 154. 2. Momentum, resulting therefore in repulsion, was produced by the rotary movement. We have referred to the law of repulsion as one of the subsidiary branches of the great law of economy, which governs matter. Repulsion is brought about by rotary action and is the basis of that separation which prevents the contact of any atom with any other atom, which keeps the planets at fixed points in space and separated stably from each other, which keeps them at a certain distance from their systemic center, and which likewise keeps the planes and subplanes from losing their material identity. Here we can see the beginning of that age-long duel between spirit and matter, which is characteristic of manifestation, one aspect working under the law of attraction and the other governed by the law of repulsion. From eon to eon, the conflict goes on, with matter becoming less potent. Gradually, so gradually as to seem negated when viewed from the physical plane, the attractive power of spirit is weakening the resistance of matter till, at the close of the greater solar cycles, destruction, as it is called, will ensue and the law of repulsion be overcome by the law of attraction. It is a destruction of form and not of matter itself, for matter is indestructible. This can be seen even now in the microcosmic life and is the cause of the disintegration of form, which holds itself as a separated unit by the very method of repulsing all other forms. It can be seen working out gradually and inappreciably in connection with the moon, which no longer is repulsive to the earth and is giving of her very substance to this planet. HPB hints at this in The Secret Doctrine, and I have here suggested the law under which this is so. Footnote. The moon, our satellite, pouring forth into the lowest globe of our planetary chain, globe D, Earth, all its energy and powers, and having transferred them to a new center, becoming virtually a dead planet in which, since the birth of our globe, rotation has ceased. From The Secret Doctrine, Volume 1, page 179. Page 155. 3. Frictional effect on all other bodies atomic, producing A. Vitality of the atom, B. Coherence of the atom, C. Ability to function, D. Heat supplied to the composite form of which it may form a fragmentary part, whether it is the heat supplied by the rotation of a planet within the form macrocosmic, or the rotation of a cell in the physical body within the form microcosmic. E. Final combustion or disintegration, when the fires latent and radiatory have achieved a specific stage. This is the secret of final obscuration and of pralaya, but cannot be dissociated from the two other factors of solar and electric fire. 4. Absorption through that depression which is seen in all whirling spheres of atomic matter at whichever surface in the sphere corresponds to the point called in a planet the North Pole. Some idea of the intention that I seek to convey may be grasped by a study of the atom as portrayed in Babbitt's Principles of Light and Color, and later in Mrs. Besant's Occult Chemistry. This depression is produced by radiations which proceed counter to the rotations of the sphere and pass down from the north southwards to a midway point. From there they tend to increase the latent heat to produce added momentum and to give specific quality according to the source from which the radiation comes. This absorption of extra spheroidal emanation is the secret of the dependence of one sphere upon another, and has its correspondence in the cycling of a ray through any plane sphere. Every atom, though termed spheroidal, is more accurately a sphere slightly depressed at one location, that location being the plane through which flows the force which animates the matter of the sphere. Page 156. This is true of all spheres, from the solar down to the atom of matter that we call the cell in the body physical. Through the depression in the physical atom flows the vitalizing force from without. Every atom is both positive and negative. It is receptive or negative where the inflowing force is concerned, and positive or radiatory where its own emanations are concerned, and in connection with its effect upon its environment. This can be predicated likewise of the entire ring-pass knot of the solar system in relation to its cosmic environment. Force flows into the solar system from three directions via three channels: A, the Sun Sirius; B, the Pleiades; C, the Great Bear. I would here point out the connection or correspondence in this statement to an earlier one made when speaking of solar radiation and the channels through which it can be felt. These currents or radiations we call A, Akashic; B, Electrical; C, Pranic. In considering the occult meaning of what is here suggested, one point in elucidation may be imparted, leaving the working out of the other two relationships to the student. The Pleiades are to the solar system the source of electrical energy, and just as our sun is the embodiment of the heart or love aspect of the Logos, who is himself the heart of one about whom naught may be said, so the Pleiades are the feminine opposite of Brahma. Think this out, for much is contained in this statement. Certain broad statements have been laid down here concerning the rotation of matter and the results produced in diverse spheres by that rotation. Page 157. What is predicated of any one sphere or atom can be predicated of all, if it is in any way an occult statement of fact, and we should be able to work out these four effects: 1, separation or the repulsive effect; 2, momentum or the interior effect; 3, frictional, environal effect; 4, absorption, the receptive or attractive effect. In every grade and type of atom, a solar system, a sun, a planet, a plane, a ray, the body of the ego, or a cell in the physical body. Roman numeral 3, the qualities of rotary motion. Every rotating sphere of matter is characterized by the three qualities of inertia, mobility, and rhythm. 1. Inertia. This characterizes every atom at the dawn of manifestation, at the beginning of a solar cycle or Maha Manvantara, or 100 years of Brahma, at the commencement of a chain, of a globe, or of any spheroidal form whatsoever, without exception. This statement, therefore, includes the totality of manifesting forms within the solar system. Let us keep clearly in our minds that we are simply considering the three qualities of matter itself, and are not considering consciousness. Inertia is the result of lack of activity and the relative quiescence of the fires of matter. These fires, during obscuration or pralaya, though latent, are free from the stimulation that comes from the aggregation of atoms into form and the consequent interplay of the forms upon each other. Where form exists and the laws of repulsion and attraction are coming into force, making radiation therefore possible, then comes stimulation, emanative effect, and a gradual speeding up which eventually, from within the atom itself, by its own rotary movement, produces the next quality. Page 158. 2. Mobility. The inherent fires of matter produce rotary movement. Eventually, this rotation results in radiation. The radiation of matter, the result of its dual heat, produces necessarily an effect upon other atoms in its environment. It matters not whether that environment is cosmic space, systemic space, or the periphery of the physical body of a man. And this interaction and interplay causes repulsion and attraction according to the polarity of the cosmic, systemic, or physical atom. Eventually, this produces coherence of form. Bodies or aggregates of atoms come into being or manifestation and persist for the length of their greater or lesser cycles until the third quality is brought into definite recognition. 3. Rhythm, or the attainment of the point of perfect balance and of equilibrium. This point of perfect balance then produces certain specific effects which might be enumerated and pondered upon, even if to our finite minds they may seem paradoxical and contradictory. The limitation lies with us and with the use of words, and not in any real inaccuracy. These effects are: A. The disintegration of form. B. The liberation of the essence which the form confines. C. The separations of spirit and matter. D. The end of a cycle, whether planetary, human, or solar. E. The production of obscuration and the end of objectivity or manifestation. F. The reabsorption of the essence and the merging again of differentiated matter with the root of matter. G. The end of time and space as we understand it. H. The unification of the three fires and the bringing about of spontaneous combustion, if one might so express it. I. The synthetic activity of matter in the three types of movement, rotary, spiraling, cyclic, and onward progression, which unified movement will be produced by the interaction of the fires of matter, of mind, and of spirit upon each other. Page 159. When the point of rhythm or balance is reached in a solar system, in a plane, in a ray, in a causal body, and in the physical body, then the occupier of the form is loosed from prison. He can withdraw to his originating source and is liberated from the sheath which has hitherto acted as a prison. And he can escape from an environment which he has utilized for the gaining of experience and as a battleground between the pairs of opposites. The sheath or form of whatever kind then automatically disintegrates. Roman numeral 4, rotary motion and symbolism. Every rotating sphere of matter can be pictured by using the same general cosmic symbols as are used for the portrayal of evolution. 1. The circle. This stands for the ring pass knot of undifferentiated matter. It stands for a solar system or the body logoic, viewed etherically. It stands for a planet or the body of a heavenly man, viewed etherically. It stands for a human body, viewed likewise, etherically. And it stands for them all at the prime or earliest epoch of manifestation. It stands finally for a single cell within the human vehicle, and for the atom of the chemist or physicist. 2. The circle with the point in the center. This signifies the production of heat in the heart of matter, the point of fire, the moment of the first rotary activity, the first straining of the atom, motivated by latent heat, into the sphere of influence of another atom. This produced the first radiation, the first pull of attraction, and the consequent setting up of a repulsion and therefore producing. 3. The circle divided into two. Page 160. This marks the active rotation and the beginning of the mobility of the atom of matter, and produces a subsequent extension of the influence of the positive point within the atom of matter till its sphere of influence extends from the center to the periphery. At the point where it touches the periphery, it contacts the influence of the atoms in its environment. Radiation is set up, and the point of depression makes its appearance, marking the inflow and outflow of force or heat. We are here only showing the application of cosmic symbols to matter, and are not dealing with manifestation from any other angle than that of the purely material. For instance, we are applying the symbol of the point within the circle to the sphere of matter and the point of latent heat. We are not handling at this point matter as informed by an entity who is to matter, when so informing, a point of conscious life. We are dealing only with matter and latent heat, with the result produced by rotary movement of radiatory heat and the consequent interplay of bodies atomic. We are therefore dealing with the point we set out to consider while studying our fifth division, the motion in the sheaths. 4. The circle divided into four. This is the true circle of matter, the equal-armed cross of the Holy Spirit, who is the personification of active, intelligent matter. This shows the fourth dimensional quality of matter and the penetration of the fire in four directions, its threefold radiation being symbolized by the triangles formed by the fourfold cross. This portrays the fourfold revolution of any atom. By this is not meant the ability of any atom to make four revolutions, but the fourth dimensional quality of the revolution, which is the goal aimed at and which is even now becoming known in matter during this fourth round and in this fourth chain. Page 161. As the fifth spirilla, or fifth stream of force in an atom, becomes developed, and man can conceive of a fourth dimensional rotary movement, the accuracy of this symbol will be recognized. It will then be seen that all sheaths in their progress from inertia to rhythm via mobility pass through all stages, whether they are logoic sheaths, the rays in which the heavenly men veil themselves, the planes which form the bodies of certain solar entities, the causal body or the sheath of the ego on the mental plane, the human physical body in its etheric constitution, or a cell in that body etheric. All these material forms, existent in etheric matter, which is the true matter of all forms, are primarily undifferentiated ovoids. They then become actively rotating or manifest latent heat. Next, they manifest duality or latent and radiatory fire. The expression of these two results in fourth dimensional action, or the wheel or rotary form, turning upon itself. 5. The swastika, or the fire extending not only from the periphery to the center in four directions, but gradually circulating and radiating from and around the entire periphery. This signifies completed activity in every department of matter until finally we have a blazing, fiery wheel turning every way with radiant channels of fire from the center to the ring pass knot, fire within, without, and around, until this wheel is consumed and there is naught remaining but perfected fire. Roman numeral 5, motion and the centers. We can take up this matter of the centers along three lines. Much has been written and discussed anent the centers, and much mystery exists which has aroused the curiosity of the ignorant and has tempted many to meddle with that which does not concern them. I seek to elucidate somewhat and to give a new angle of vision to the study of these abstruse matters. Page 162. I do not in any way intend to take up the subject from such an angle as to convey rules and information that will enable a man to vivify these centers and bring them into play. I sound here a solemn word of warning. Let a man apply himself to a life of high altruism, to a discipline that will refine and bring his lower vehicles into subjection, and to a strenuous endeavor to purify and control his sheaths. When he has done this, and has both raised and stabilized his vibration, he will find that the development and functioning of the centers has pursued a parallel course, and that, apart from his active participation, the work has proceeded along the desired lines. Much danger and dire calamity attends the man who arouses these centers by unlawful methods and who experiments with the fires of his body without the needed technical knowledge. He may, by his efforts, succeed in arousing the fires and in intensifying the action of the centers, but he will pay the price of ignorance in the destruction of matter, in the burning of bodily or brain tissue, in the development of insanity, and in opening the door to currents and forces undesirable and destructive. It is not the part of a coward in these matters concerning the subjective life to move with caution and with care. It is the part of discretion. The aspirant, therefore, has three things to do. 1. Purify, discipline, and transmute his threefold lower nature. 2. Develop knowledge of himself and equip his mental body. Build the causal body by good deeds and thoughts. 3. Serve his race in utter self-abnegation. In doing this, he fulfills the law. He puts himself in the right condition for training, fits himself for the ultimate application of the rod of initiation, and thus minimizes the danger that attends the wakening of the fire. Page 163. All that is intended to do in this treatise is to cast some further light upon these centers, to show their interrelation, and to trace the effects produced by their rightful development. To do this, as before stated, the subject will be divided into the following divisions. 1. The nature of the centers. 2. The centers and the rays. 3. The centers and kundalini. 4. The centers and the senses. 5, the centers and initiation. As can be seen from the above tabulation, the subject is not only vast, but abstruse. This is principally owing to the fact that until the race is normally clairvoyant, it is not in a position to verify what is said, and has to accept the statements of those who profess to know. Later, when man can see and prove for himself, it will be possible to check up these statements. The time is not yet, except for the few. 1. The nature of the centers. Let us take the first point. I wish to enumerate the centers to be dealt with in this treatise, keeping the enumeration very closely to that laid down earlier, and dealing not with all the centers, but simply with those closely concerned with man's fivefold evolution. As before stated, man, at the close of his long pilgrimage, will have passed through the five kingdoms of nature on his way back to his source. 1. The mineral kingdom. 2. The vegetable kingdom. 3. The animal kingdom. 4. The human kingdom. 5. The superhuman, or the spiritual kingdom, and will have developed full consciousness on the five planes. 1. The physical plane. 2. The emotional or astral plane. 3. The mental plane. 4. The intuitional or the buddhic plane. 5. The spiritual, atmic, or nirvanic plane. By means of the five senses and their correspondences on all the five planes, 1. Hearing. 2. Touch. 3. Sight. 4. Taste. 5. Smell. Page 164. By the time the fifth round is reached, 3/5 of the human family will have attained this point and will have their five senses fully functioning on the three planes in the three worlds, leaving the two other planes to be subjugated during the remaining two rounds. I would here point out a fact that is little realized, that in this fivefold evolution of man and in this solar system, the two remaining rounds in any planetary cycle and the sixth and seventh root races in those cycles are always synthetic. Their function is to gather up and synthesize that which has been achieved in the earlier five. For instance, in this root race, the sixth and seventh subraces will synthesize and blend that which the earlier five have wrought out. The analogy lies in the fact that in this solar system, the two higher planes, the logoic and the monadic, are synthetic. One is the synthesizing plane for the logos, from whence he abstracts the essence in manifestation, the other for the monad, from whence the monad abstracts and garners the fruits of objectivity. We will, therefore, only concern ourselves here with those centers which relate to the evolution of the subtler bodies, the evolution of the psyche, and not with those connected with the evolution and propagation of the dense physical body. These centers are five in number. 1. That at the base of the spine, the only one dealt with, that has a physical effect. Page 165. 2. That situated at the solar plexus, the most important one in the body from the standpoint of the astral plane. 3. That found at the throat, the most important from the standpoint of the mental plane. 4. That in the region of the heart, which has an occult link with the buddhic plane. 5. That above the top of the head, which is the crown, and has relation with the atmic plane. We do not deal with the lower centers of generation, nor with the spleen, which has a direct connection with the etheric and is the transmitter of prana. They have been dealt with earlier. The centers in the human being deal fundamentally with the fire aspect in man, or with his divine spirit. They are definitely connected with the monad, with the will aspect, with immortality, with existence, with the will to live, and with the inherent powers of spirit. They are not connected with objectivity and manifestation, but with force, or the powers of the divine life. The correspondence in the macrocosm can be found in the force which manipulates the cosmic nebulae, and which by its whirling rotary motion eventually builds them into planets or spheroidal bodies. These planets are each of them an expression of the will to live of some cosmic entity, and the force that swirled, that rotated, that built, that solidified, and that continues to hold in form coherent is the force of some cosmic being. This force originates on cosmic mental levels from certain great foci there, descends to the cosmic astral, forming corresponding cosmic focal points, and on the fourth cosmic etheric level, the buddhic plane of our solar system, finds its outlet in certain great centers. These centers are again reflected or reproduced in the three worlds of human endeavor, page 166. The heavenly men, therefore, have centers on three solar planes, a fact to be remembered. A. On the monadic plane, the plane of the seven rays. B. On the Buddhic plane, where the masters and their disciples form the 49 centers in the bodies of the seven heavenly men. C. On the fourth etheric physical plane, where the sacred planets, the dense bodies in etheric matter of the heavenly men, are to be found. Here again we can trace the microcosmic correspondence. In the human being, the centers are found on the mental plane from which originates the impulse for physical plane existence, or the will to incarnate. From thence, they can be traced to the astral level, and eventually to the etheric levels, to the fourth ether, where they practically go through the same evolution that the planetary centers went through and are instrumental in bringing about objectivity, being the force centers. The centers are formed entirely of streams of force pouring down from the ego, who transmits it from the monad. In this we have the secret of the gradual vibratory quickening of the centers as the ego first comes into control, or activity, and later, after initiation, the monad, thus bringing about changes and increased vitality within these spheres of fire or of pure life force. The centers, therefore, when functioning properly, form the body of fire, which eventually is all that is left, first to man in the three worlds, and later to the monad. This body of fire is the body incorruptible, or indestructible, spoken of by St. Paul, and is the product of evolution, of the perfect blending of the three fires which ultimately destroy the form. When the form is destroyed, there is left this intangible spiritual body of fire, one pure flame, distinguished by seven brilliant centers of intenser burning, page 167. This electric fire is the result of the bringing together of the two poles and demonstrates at the moment of complete at-one-ment the occult truth of the words, "Our God is a consuming fire." Three of these centers are called major centers as they embody the three aspects of the threefold monad, will, love, and intelligence. One, the head center, the monad, will or power. Two, the heart center, the ego, love, and wisdom. Three, the throat center, the personality, activity, or intelligence. The other two centers have to do primarily with the etheric body and with the astral plane. The throat center synthesizes the entire personality life and is definitely connected with the mental plane. The three planes and the two higher planes, and the three centers with the two other centers, the heart and head. Yet, we must not forget that the center at the base of the spine is also a synthesizer, as would normally be expected if it is recognized that the lowest plane of all manifestation is the point of deepest reflection. This lowest center, by synthesizing the fire of Kundalini and the pranic fires, eventually blends and merges with the fire of mind, and later with the fire of spirit, producing thus consummation. We must disabuse our minds of the idea that these centers are physical things. They are whirlpools of force that swirl etheric, astral, and mental matter into activity of some kind. Because the action is rotary, the result produced in matter is a circular effect that can be seen by the clairvoyant as fiery wheels situated, one, in the region of the spine, the lowest part, two, between the ribs, just below the diaphragm, three, in the region of the left breast, four, in the center of the throat, five, just above the top of the head. End of side one, cassette number four, A Treatise on Cosmic Fire, page 168. Continued on side two. Number four, side two, A Treatise on Cosmic Fire. Continuing section one, division E, Motion on the Physical and Astral Planes, on page 168. I would like to describe these centers in greater detail, dealing with them as seen in etheric matter, and basing what I say upon a similar statement by Mr. C. W. Leadbeater in Inner Life, Volume 1, page 447 to 460. We will note the colors and petals. 1. The base of the spine, four petals. These petals are in the shape of a cross and radiate with orange fire. 2. The solar plexus, 10 petals, rosy color with admixture of green. 3. The heart center, 12 petals glowing golden. 4. The throat center, 16 petals of a silvery blue, with blue predominating. 5. The head center in its twofold divisions, A, between the eyebrows, consisting of 96 petals, one half of the lotus being rose and yellow, and the other half blue and purple. B, the very top of the head, a center consisting of 12 major petals of white and gold, and 960 secondary petals arranged around the central 12. This makes a total of 1,068 petals in the two head centers, making the one center, or 356 triplicities. All these figures have an occult significance. Just as the monad is the sum total of all the three aspects and of the seven principles of man, so is the head center a replica of this, and has within its sphere of influence seven other centers with itself for synthesis. These seven centers are likewise divided into the three major and the four minor centers, with their union and consummation seen in the gorgeous center surmounting and enveloping them all. There are also the three physical centers called A, the ulna major center, B, the pineal gland, C, the pituitary body, with four lesser centers. These four lesser centers are blended in that center which we call the ulna major center and need not concern us. Page 169. I would here also point out that there is a close connection, A, between the ulna major center and the throat center, B, between the heart center and the pituitary body, C, between the head center and the pineal gland. It would repay the student to contemplate the interesting succession of triangles that are to be found and the way in which they must be linked by the progression of the fire before that fire can perfectly vivify them and thence pass on to other transmutations. We might enumerate some of these triangles, bearing always in mind that according to the ray, so will proceed the geometric rising of the fire, and according to the ray, so will the points be touched in ordered sequence. Herein lies one of the secrets of initiation, and herein is found some of the dangers entailed in a too quick publication of information concerning the rays. 1. The pranic triangle. A. The shoulder center. B. The center near the diaphragm. C. The spleen. 2. Man controlled from the astral plane. A. The base of the spine. B. The solar plexus. C. The heart. 3. Man controlled from the mental plane. A. The base of the spine. B. The heart. C. The throat. Page 170. 4. Man partially controlled by the ego, advanced man. A. The heart. B. The throat. C. The head, i.e. the four lesser centers and their synthesis, the ulna center. 5. Spiritual man to the third initiation. A. The heart. B. The throat. C. The seven head centers. 6. Spiritual man to the fifth initiation. A. The heart. B. The seven head centers. C. The two many-petaled lotuses. All these different periods show different triangular radiances. We must not infer from this that when the fire is centered in one triangle, it is not demonstrating in others. Once the fire has free passage along any triangle, it flames continuously, but always there is one triangle more radiant and luminous than the others, and it is from these glowing triangles of light, issuing from wheels and vortices of fire, that the clairvoyant and the teachers of the race can appraise a man's position in the scheme of things and judge of his attainment. At the culmination of life experience, and when man has reached his goal, each triangle is a radiant path of fire, and each center a wheel of living fiery force, rotating at terrific speed. The center at this stage not only rotates in a specific direction, but literally turns upon itself, forming a living, flaming, iridescent globe of pure fire, and holding within it a certain geometrical shape, yet withal vibrating so rapidly that the eye can scarcely follow it. Above all, at the top of the head, will be seen a fiery display that seems to put all the other centers into insignificance. From the heart of this many-petaled lotus issues a flame of fire with the basic hue of a man's ray. This flame mounts upward and seems to attract downward a sheet of electric light, which is the downflow from the spirit on the highest plane. Page 171. This marks the blending of the fires and the deliverance of man from the trammels of matter. We might now note that the evolution of these centers of force can be portrayed not only in words, but under the same five symbols that have so often a cosmic interpretation. 1. The circle. At this stage, the center is seen simply as a saucer-like depression, as Mr. C.W. Leadbeater expresses it, of dimly glowing fire, a fire diffused throughout, but of no real intensity. The wheel rotates slowly, but so slowly as to be almost inappreciable. This corresponds to the little developed stage and to the early Lemurian root race and to that period wherein man was simply animal. All that was being formed was a field for the appearance of the spark of mind. 2. The circle with the point in the center. The center is here seen with a point of glowing fire in the middle of the saucer-like depression, and the rotation becomes more rapid. This corresponds to the stage wherein mind is beginning to be felt, and thus to later Lemurian days. 3. The divided circle. At this stage, the point of light in the center of the vortex of fire is becoming more active. Rotary motion causes it to burn more brightly and to cast off rays of fire in two directions, which appear to split the vortex into two. The motion is much accelerated, and the dividing flame in the vortex shoots back and forth, stimulating the glow of the center itself, till a much greater point of radiance is achieved. This corresponds to Atlantean days. 4. The circle divided into four. We come now to the point where the center is exceedingly active, with the cross within its periphery rotating as well as the wheel itself, and causing an effect of great beauty and activity. The man has reached a stage of very high development mentally, corresponding to the fifth root race or to the fifth round in the larger cycle. He is conscious of two activities within himself, symbolized by the rotating wheel and the inner rotating cross, page 172. He is sensing the spiritual, though actively functioning in the personal life, and the development has reached a point wherein he is nearing the probationary path. 5. The swastika. At this stage, the center becomes fourth dimensional. The inner rotating cross begins to turn upon its axis and to drive the flaming periphery to all sides so that the center is better described as a sphere of fire than as a wheel. It marks the stage of the path in its two divisions, for the process of producing the effect described covers the whole period of the path. At the close, the centers are seen as globes of radiant fire with the spokes of the wheel, or the evolution of the cross from the point in the center, merging and blending into a fire that burneth up the whole. A brief sentence has its place here, owing to its relation to this subject. Another sentence is also added here, which, if meditated upon, will prove of real value and will have a definite effect upon one of the centers, which center it is for the student himself to find out. These two sentences are as follows. Quote, "The secret of the fire lies hid in the second letter of the sacred word. The mystery of life is concealed within the heart. When the lower point vibrates, when the sacred triangle glows, when the point, the middle center, and the apex likewise burn, then the two triangles, the greater and the lesser, merge with one flame which burneth up the whole." Close quote. Quote, "The fire within the lesser fire findeth its progress much impelled, when the circle of the moving and the unmoving of the lesser wheel within the greater wheel that moveth not in time, findeth a twofold outlet. It then shineth with the glory of the twofold one and of his sixfold brother. Thohat rusheth through space. He searcheth for his complement. The breath of the unmoving one and the fire of the one who seeth the whole from the beginning rush to meet each other, and the unmoving becomes the sphere of activity." Close quote. Page 173. We take up our second point in the consideration of the centers. 2. The centers in connection with the rays. This will give us a large range of subject to be dealt with and much food for thought, surmise, and wise conjecture. All that is here stated is given simply as basic or foundation facts upon which may be erected a structure of conjecture and of logical reasoning, employing the imagination and thereby effecting two things. These are an ability to expand our mental concept and to build the antaskarana, or that bridge which all who seek to function in the Buddhic vehicle must build between higher and lower mind, hence the necessity for the use of the imagination, which is the astral equivalent to mental discrimination, and its ultimate transmutation into intuition. All teachers who have taken pupils in hand for training and who seek to use them in world service follow the method of imparting a fact, oft veiled in words and blinded by symbol, and then of leaving the pupil to follow his own deductions. Discrimination is thereby developed, and discrimination is the main method whereby the spirit effects its liberation from the trammels of matter, and discerns between illusion and that which is veiled by it. Not much can be here imparted, as the subject, if dealt with at all fully, would convey too much information to those liable to misuse it. As we know, the evolution of the centers is a slow and gradual thing, and proceeds in ordered cycles, varying according to the ray of a man's monad. Page 174. The life of the pilgrim can be, for purposes of discussion, divided into three main periods. 1. That period wherein he is under the influence of the personality ray. 2. That wherein he comes under the ray of the ego. 3. That wherein the monadic ray holds sway. The first period is by far the longest and covers the vast progression of the centuries wherein the activity aspect of the threefold self is being developed. Life after life slips away, during which the aspect of manas or mind is being slowly wrought out, and the human being comes more and more under the control of his intellect, operating through his physical brain. This might be looked upon as corresponding to the period of the first solar system, wherein the third aspect, logoic, that of Brahma, mind or intelligence, was being brought to the point of achievement. Footnote. When the last cycle of man-bearing has been completed by that last fecund earth, and humanity has reached in a mass the stage of Buddhahood and passed out of the objective existence into the mystery of nirvana, then strikes the hour. The seen becomes the unseen. The concrete resumes its pre-cyclic state of atomic distribution. But the dead worlds left behind the onsweeping impulse do not continue dead. Motion is the eternal order of things, and affinity or attraction its handmaid of all works. The thrill of life will again reunite the atom, and it will stir again in the inert planet when the time comes. Though all its forces have remained statu quo and are now asleep, yet little by little it will, when the hour restrikes, gather for a new cycle of man-bearing maternity and give birth to something still higher as moral and physical types than during the preceding Manvantara. And its cosmic atoms, already in a differentiated state, differing in the producing force in the mechanical sense of motions and effects, remain statu quo as well as globes and everything else in the process of formation. Such is the hypothesis, fully in accordance with your note. For as planetary development is as progressive as human or race evolution, the hour of the pralaya's coming catches the series of worlds at successive stages of evolution, i.e., each has attained to some one of the periods of evolutionary progress. Each stops there until the outward impulse of the next Manvantara sets it going from that very point, like a stopwatch rewound. Therefore, I have used the word differentiated. At the coming of the pralaya, no human, animal, or even vegetable entity will be alive to see it, but there will be the earths or globes with their mineral kingdoms, and all these planets will be physically disintegrated in the pralaya, yet not destroyed, for they have their places in the sequence of evolution, and their privations coming again out of the subjective, they will find the exact point from which they have to move on around the chain of manifested forms. This, as you know, is repeated endlessly through eternity. Each man of us has gone this ceaseless round and will repeat it forever and ever. The deviation of each one's course and his rate of progress from nirvana to nirvana is governed by causes which he himself creates out of the exigencies in which he finds himself entangled. From the Mahatma Letters to A.P. Sinnett, page 67. Return to text. Then the second aspect began in this present solar system to be blended with and wrought out through it. Centuries go by and the man becomes ever more actively intelligent, and the field of his life more suitable for the coming in of this second aspect. Page 175. The correspondence lies in similitude and not in detail as seen in time and space. It covers the period of the first three triangles dealt with earlier. We must not forget that for the sake of clarity, we are here differentiating between the different aspects and considering their separated development, a thing only permissible in time and space or during the evolutionary process, but not permissible from the standpoint of the eternal now and from the unity of the all self. The Vishnu or the love wisdom aspect is latent in the self and is part of the monadic content, but the Brahma aspect, the activity intelligence aspect, precedes its manifestation in time. The tabernacle in the wilderness preceded the building of the Temple of Solomon. The kernel of wheat has to lie in the darkness of Mother Earth before the golden perfected ear can be seen, and the lotus has to cast its roots down into the mud before the beauty of the blossom can be produced. The second period, wherein the egoic ray holds sway, is not so long comparatively. It covers the period wherein the fourth and fifth triangles are being vivified and marks the lives wherein the man throws his forces on the side of evolution, disciplines his life, steps upon the probationary path, and continues up to the third initiation. Under the regime of the personality ray, the man proceeds upon the five rays to work consciously with mind, the sixth sense, passing first upon the four minor rays and eventually upon the third. He works upon the third ray, or that of active intelligence, and from thence proceeds to one of the sub-rays of the two other major rays, if the third is not his egoic ray. Page 176. Inquiry might naturally arise as to whether the egoic ray is necessarily one of the three major rays, and if initiates and masters are not to be found upon some of the rays of mind, the minor four. The answer lies here. The egoic ray can always be one of the seven, but we need to remember that in this astral Buddhic solar system, wherein love and wisdom are being brought into objectivity, the bulk of the monads are on the love-wisdom ray. The fact, therefore, of its being the synthetic ray has a vast significance. This is the system of the sun, whose name is love. This is the divine incarnation of Vishnu. The dragon of wisdom is in manifestation, and he brings into incarnation those cosmic entities who are in essence identical with himself. After the third initiation, all human beings find themselves on their monadic ray, on one of the three major rays, and the fact that masters and initiates are found on all the rays is due to the following two factors. First, each major ray has its sub-rays which correspond to all the seven. Second, many of the guides of the race transfer from one ray to another as they are needed and as the work may require. When one of the masters or initiates is transferred, it causes a complete readjustment. When a master likewise leaves the hierarchy of our planet to take up work elsewhere, it frequently necessitates a complete reorganization and a fresh admission of members into the Great White Lodge. These facts have been but little realized. We might here also take the opportunity to point out that we are not dealing with Earth conditions when we consider the rays, nor are we only concerned with the evolution of the monads upon this planet, but are equally concerned with the solar system in which our Earth holds a necessary but not supreme place. Page 177. The Earth is an organism within a greater one, and this fact needs wider recognition. The sons of men upon this planet so often view the whole system as if the earth were in the position of the sun, the center of the solar organism. Under the regime of the ego, the ray upon which the ego can be found holds sway. This ray is simply direct reflection of the monad and is dependent upon that aspect of the spiritual triad which for the man is at any particular time the line of least resistance. By that we must understand that sometimes the ray will have for its center of force the atmic aspect, sometimes the buddhic, and at other times the monastic aspect. Though the triad is threefold, yet its egoic outposts, if one may so express it, will be either definitely atmic or predominantly buddhic or monastic. Here again I would draw attention to the fact that this triple demonstration can be seen under three forms, making in all a ninefold choice of rays for the ego. Atmic aspect, 1. Atmic, atmic, 2. Atmic, buddhic, 3. Atmic, monastic. Buddhic aspect, 1. Buddhic, atmic, 2. Buddhic, buddhic, 3. Buddhic, monastic. Monastic aspect, 1. Monastic atmic, 2. Monastic buddhic, 3. Monastic monastic. This literally means that the three major rays can each be subdivided, in connection with the ego, into three divisions. This fact is also little appreciated. Page 178. The third period, wherein the monadic ray makes itself felt on the physical plane, is by far the shortest, and covers the period in which the sixth triangle holds sway. It marks the period of achievement, of liberation, and therefore, although it is the shortest period when viewed from below upward, it is the period of comparative permanence when viewed from the plane of the monad. It covers the totality of time remaining in the 100 years of Brahma, or the remainder of the process of manifestation. When we study, therefore, the sets of triangles earlier referred to and the periods of ray dominance, we will find much room for thought. Let me here point out, however, that the six groups of triangles are in all but five, if we eliminate the pranic triangle, which has to do with matter itself and is not counted any more than the dense physical is counted a principle. Therefore, we have A, two triangles brought to vivification by the personality ray, B, two triangles brought to vivification by the egoic ray, C, the synthesizing triangle of the monad. We must nevertheless recollect that the complexity is increased by the fact that the personality triangles will be brought to full activity according to the ray of the monad or spirit. Therefore, no hard or fast rule can be laid down about development. The egoic triangles are dependent largely upon the reflection in the personality of the spiritual life force. They are the midway point, just as the causal or egoic body is the transmitting point, when sufficiently equipped and built, between the higher and the lower. The permanent atoms are enclosed within the periphery of the causal body, yet that relatively permanent body is built and enlarged, expanded and wrought into a central receiving and transmission station, using inadequate words to convey an occult idea, by the direct action of the centers, and of the centers above all. Page 179. Just as it was spiritual force or the will aspect that built the solar system, so it is the same force in the man that builds the causal body. By the bringing together of spirit and matter, father, mother, in the macrocosm, and their union through the action of the will, the objective solar system, or the sun, was produced, that sun of desire whose characteristic is love, and whose nature is buddhi or spiritual wisdom. By the bringing together, in microcosm, of spirit and matter, and their coherence by means of force, or the spiritual will, that objective system, the causal body, is being produced. It is the product of transmuted desire, whose characteristic, when fully demonstrated, will be love, the expression eventually on the physical plane of buddhi. The causal body is but the sheath of the ego. The solar system is but the sheath of the sun. In both the greater and the lesser systems, four centers exist which are productive of objectivity. The centers in the human being are reflections in the three worlds of those higher force centers. Before taking up the subject of Kundalini and the centers, it would be well to extend the information given above from its prime significance for man as that which concerns himself, to the solar system, the macrocosm, and to the cosmos. What can be predicated of the microcosm is naturally true of the macrocosm and of the cosmos. It will not be possible to give the systemic triangles, for the information would have to be so blinded that, except for those who have occult knowledge and the intuition developed, it would be practically useless intellectually. But certain things may be pointed out in this connection that may be of interest. The solar system. We might briefly look at this from the standpoint of the centers of the heavenly men and of the grand man of the heavens, the Logos. Page 180. A. The heavenly men. The heavenly men, in themselves, embody centers just as does a human being, and on their own plane, these centers of force can be found. Again, we need to recollect that these centers of force on cosmic levels and in manifestation in the objective system demonstrate as the great force centers of which any particular group of adepts and their pupils are the exponents. Every group of masters and all the human beings incarnate or discarnate who are held within the periphery of their consciousness are centers of force of some particular kind or quality. This is a fact generally recognized, but students should be urged to link up this fact with the information imparted on the centers of the human being and see if much is not thereby learnt. These centers of force will demonstrate on etheric levels and on the subtler planes, just as they do in a man, and they will be vivified, as are the human centers, by planetary kundalini progressing in the desired triangles. Two hints can here be given for thoughtful consideration. In connection with one of the heavenly men, which one cannot at this juncture be pointed out, we have one triangle of force to be seen in the following three centers. A. The force center of which the Manu and his group are the expression. B. The center of which the Bodhisattva, or the Christ and his adherents, are the focal point. C. The center of which the Maha Chohan and his followers are the exponents. These three groups form the three centers in one great triangle, a triangle which is not yet in complete vivification at this stage of evolutionary development. Page 181. Another triangle, in connection with our own planetary logos, is that formed by the seven Kumaras, the four exoteric Kumaras, corresponding to the four minor head centers, and the three esoteric Kumaras, corresponding to the three major head centers. Footnote. There are seven Kumaras connected with our planetary evolution, of whom four are exoteric. The four exoteric have vehicles in etheric matter. Three Kumaras are esoteric and have their vehicles in subtler matters still. Sanat Kumara, the Lord of the World, is the representative on Earth of the specialized force of the planetary logos. The other six Kumaras transmit energy from the other six planetary schemes. Return to text. The second hint I seek to give lies in the triangle formed by the Earth, Mars, and Mercury. In connection with this triangle, the analogy lies in the fact that Mercury and the center at the base of the spine in the human being are closely allied. Mercury demonstrates kundalini in intelligent activity, while Mars demonstrates kundalini latent. The truth lies hid in their two astrological symbols. In transmutation and planetary geometrizing, the secret may be revealed. B. The grand man of the heavens. The seven heavenly men are the seven centers in the body of the Logos, bearing to him a relationship identical with that borne by the masters and their affiliated groups to some planetary Logos. Systemic kundalini goes forward to the vivification of these centers, and at this stage of development, certain centers are more closely allied than others. Just as in connection with our planetary logos, the three etheric planets of our chain, Earth, Mercury, and Mars, form a triangle of rare importance, so it may be here said that at the present point in evolution of the logoic centers, Venus, Earth, and Saturn form one triangle of great interest. Footnote. The chains of any planetary scheme are frequently called by the names of the seven sacred planets, making the study of the law of correspondences easier. Similarly, the globes of any chain are called by planetary names, as is the case here. There are planetary schemes called Mars and Mercury. Return to text. It is a triangle that is at this time undergoing vivification through the action of Kundalini. It is consequently increasing the vibratory capacity of the centers, which are becoming slowly fourth dimensional. Page 182. It is not yet permissible to point out others of the great triangles, but as regards the centers, we may here give two hints. First, Venus corresponds to the heart center in the body logoic, and has an interrelationship, therefore, with all the other centers in the solar system, wherein the heart aspect is the one of greater prominence. Second, Saturn corresponds to the throat center, or to the creative activity of the third aspect. As evolution proceeds, the other centers attain a more pronounced vibration, and the fire, circulating triangularly, will bring them into greater prominence. The two above mentioned, however, are of prime importance at this time. These two, with the lesser triangle of our chain, constitute the focal point of energy viewed from our planetary standpoint. In addition to these, some hints in connection with the microcosmic and macrocosmic centers, we might here give the cosmic correspondences at which it is possible to hint. The cosmos. Our solar system, with the Pleiades and one of the stars of the Great Bear, form a cosmic triangle, or an aggregation of three centers in the body of him of whom naught may be said. The seven stars in the constellation of the Great Bear are the correspondences to the seven head centers in the body of that being greater than our logos. Again, two other systems, when allied with the solar system and the Pleiades, make a lower quaternary, which are eventually synthesized into the seven head centers in much the same way as in the human being after the fourth initiation. Page 183. 1. The base of the spine. 2. The solar plexus. 3. The heart. 4. The throat. The sevenfold head center, in its turn, finds ultimate expression in the gorgeous twofold center above the top of the head and surrounding it. Equally so, beyond the above-named constellations, is still another cosmic center. The name of this center is one of the secrets of the final initiation, the seventh. These are the only correspondences that may as yet be imparted. What lies beyond the solar ring pass knot may be of intellectual interest, but for the purposes of microcosmic evolution, it is a matter of no vast import. 3. The centers and Kundalini. As stated, it is not possible to impart much about Kundalini or the serpent fire. It might be of value, however, briefly to enumerate what has been said. A. Kundalini lies at the base of the spine, and, in the normal average man, its main function is the vitalization of the body. B. Kundalini makes three at-one-ments during the period of evolution, one with the radiatory fires of the body or prana at a point between the shoulder blades, two with the fires of mind at a point at the very top of the spine in the center of the back part of the throat, three with the fire of spirit at the point where these two united fires of matter and of mind issue from the top of the head. C. Each of the three channels within the spinal column have for specific purpose the blending of these threefold fires. We need to bear in mind that the fires circulate and that at the moment of achievement every triangle in the body is vivified, every center is fully functioning, and a threefold path of fire can be seen extending the entire length of the backbone. Page 184. D. When Kundalini has blended with the pranic fire, the centers become three-dimensional. When it blends with mind or solar fire and the two fires are perfectly united, the centers become fourth-dimensional. When it blends with the electric fire of pure spirit after the third initiation, they take on two more dimensions. E. Kundalini, as it is aroused, steadily increases the vibratory action not only of the centers, but of every atom of matter in all the bodies, etheric, astral, and mental. This quickening of activity has a dual effect of great interest. 1. It causes the elimination of all matter that is coarse and unsuitable, and casts it off in exactly the same way as a rapidly rotating wheel casts off or rejects from its surface. 2. It sweeps into its sphere of influence matter that is keyed to its own vibration and builds it into its vibratory content, This is but a reflection of the action of the Logos in sweeping into differentiation the matter of the solar system. Kundalini is likewise the fire or force of matter, and therefore the life of the third Logos. F. Kundalini has two effects upon the etheric web, as it is called. One, by its gradually increasing action, it purifies that etheric form and cleanses it from dross, as the Christian expresses it. Two, eventually, after the two fires of matter and the fire of mind have begun to blend, a slow and gradual process, the web itself is destroyed, and by the time the third initiation is reached, the man should have continuity of consciousness. Page 185. This is so unless, for certain work and for certain specific ends, the man consciously and willingly foregoes the burning of the web, a thing which can be brought about by the conscious action of the will. 4. The centers and the senses, normal and supernormal. Before at all dealing with the centers and their relationship to the senses, it will be necessary, first of all, to point out certain facts of interest in connection with those senses, and so clear the ground for further information. Page 186. What are the senses? How many are there? And what is their connection with the indwelling man, the thinker, the divine Manasaputra? These are questions of vital moment, and in their due comprehension comes the ability wisely to follow the path of knowledge. The senses might be defined as those organs whereby man becomes aware of his surroundings. We should perhaps express them not so much as organs, for after all an organ is a material form existent for a purpose, but as media whereby the thinker comes in contact with his environment. They are the means whereby he makes investigation on the plane of the gross physical, for instance. The means whereby he buys his experience, whereby he discovers that what he requires to know, whereby he becomes aware, and whereby he expands his consciousness. We are dealing here with the five senses as used by the human being. In the animal, these five senses exist, but as the thinking correlating faculty is lacking, as the relation between the self and the not-self is but little developed, we will not concern ourselves with them at this juncture. The senses in the animal kingdom are group faculty and demonstrate as racial instinct. The senses in man are his individual asset and demonstrate A, as the separate realization of self-consciousness, B, as ability to assert that individualism, C, as a valuable means to self-conscious evolution, D, as a source of knowledge, E, as the transmuting faculty towards the close of life in the three worlds. As we know, the senses are five in number and in order of development are as follows. A. Hearing. B. Touch. C. Sight. D. Taste. E. Smell. Page 187. Each of these five senses has a definite connection with one or other plane and has also a correspondence on all planes. Let us first take up each of these senses, point out some interesting facts in connection with them, and suggest their subplane correspondence. 1. Physical plane, sense, hearing. 2. Astral plane, sense, touch or feeling. 3. Mental plane, sense, sight. 4. Buddhic plane, sense, taste. 5. Atmic plane, sense, smell. In the two lower planes in the three worlds, the astral and the physical, the five subplanes of human endeavor are the five highest. The two lowest subplanes, the sixth and seventh, are what we might express as below the threshold and concern forms of life beneath the human altogether. We have a corroborating analogy in the fact that the two earliest root races in this round are not definitely human and that it is the third root race which is really human for the first time. Counting, therefore, from the bottom upwards, it is only the third subplane on the physical and the astral planes which mark the commencement of human effort, leaving five subplanes to be subdued. On the mental plane, the five lower subplanes have to be subjugated during purely human evolution. When the consciousness is centered on the fifth subplane, counting from below upwards, then the planes of abstraction, from the standpoint of man in the three worlds, supervene the two subplanes of synthesis, demonstrating through the synthesis of the five senses. In the evolution of the heavenly man, we have exactly the same thing. the five planes of endeavor, the five lower planes of the solar system, and the two higher planes of abstraction, the spiritual or monadic, and the divine or logoic. Page 188. Microcosmic sensory evolution. Physical plane. 1. Hearing. 5th. Gaseous. 2. Touch feeling. 4th. First etheric. 3. Sight. 3rd. Super etheric. 4. Taste. 2nd. Subatomic. 5. Smell. 1st. Atomic. Astral plane. 1. Clairaudience. 5th. 2. Psychometry. 4th. 3. Clairvoyance. 3rd. 4. Imagination. 2nd. 5. Emotional idealism. 1st. Mental plane. 1. Higher clairaudience. 7th. 2. Planetary psychometry. 6th. 3. Higher clairvoyance. 5th. 4. Discrimination. 4th. 5. Spiritual discernment. 3rd. Response to group vibration. 2nd. Spiritual telepathy. 1st. It is to be noted here that the 7th, 6th, 5th, and 4th are all form, while the 3rd, 2nd, and 1st are formless. Buddhic plane. 1. Comprehension. 7th. 2. Healing. 6th. 3. Divine vision. 5th. 4. Intuition. 4th. 5. Idealism. 3rd. Atmic plane. 1. Beatitude. 7th. 2. Active service. 6th. 3. Realization. 5th. 4. Perfection. 4th. 5. All knowledge. 3rd. It can be noted that we have not summed up the two planes of abstraction on the atmic and the buddhic planes, the reason being that they mark a degree of realization which is the property of initiates of higher degree than that of the adept, and which is beyond the concept of the evolving human unit for whom this treatise is written. Page 189. We might here, for the sake of clarity, tabulate the five different aspects of the five senses on the five planes so that their correspondences may be readily visualized, using the above table as the basis. A. The first sense, hearing. 1. Physical hearing. 2. Clairaudience. 3. Higher clairaudience. 4. Comprehension of four sounds. 5. Beatitude. B. The second sense, touch or feeling. 1. Physical touch. 2. Psychometry. 3. Planetary psychometry. 4. Healing. 5. Active service. C. The third sense, sight. 1. Physical sight. 2. Clairvoyance. 3. Higher clairvoyance. 4. Divine vision. 5. Realization. D. The fourth sense, taste. 1. Physical taste. 2. Imagination. 3. Discrimination. 4. Intuition. 5. Perfection. E. The fifth sense, smell. 1. Physical smell. 2. Emotional idealism. 3. Spiritual discernment. 4. Idealism. 5. All knowledge. End of side 2. Cassette number 4. A Treatise on Cosmic Fire, page 189. Continued on side 1 of cassette number 5.